Chapter 11. Luna City. Anubis's side hatch slid open to reveal Sheriff Gordon in the pressurized hallway, arms crossed beneath his badge.
"Hope you realize what a goddamned mess all this has caused."
Wagid waved it off and stepped out of the buggy.
"What's happening with the evacuation?"
"Next shuttle comes in tomorrow morning. Not many seats, but we'll send home whom we can."
"Which is how many?"
"Maybe a dozen."
"A dozen?"
echoed Callie from inside Anubis.
"That's it?"
"It's not like carriers come up here half empty."
Gordon turned his attention back to Wagid.
"Where's your other buggy?"
"We had to leave it. Low battery. We'll pick it up after daybreak."
"Someone's feeling optimistic," murmured Jake.
Wagid rubbed the back of his head.
"When's the evac coming?"
The sheriff sucked in a breath, let it hiss out between his teeth.
"There isn't an evac coming."
"What?
Why not?"
asked Jake. He grabbed a recharge cable and dragged it back to the buggy. Callie met him there, still listening in to the discussion.
"Because," Gordon said, "our dear Mayor Gathol hasn't asked for one."
"What?"
repeated Wagid.
"She doesn't want to say anything until we know the status of the Hausman fuckwit for certain. We all know it'll be the first thing they ask about, and she doesn't want to get stuck saying, 'I've got no idea, we've got other priorities right now.'"
"Did you at least alert Discorp?"
asked Izmi. She climbed out of Anubis and moved to stand by Wagid.
"I'm just the sheriff. They're not going to listen to me without official confirmation from her."
"Gordon," Wagid said, "we've been talking about this for hours. We don't have a lot of time. We need to evacuate Luna City."
"I'm not the one you need to convince."
He tipped his head.
"I still don't know what the fuck that is out there, but I can admit it's enough to rate an evacuation."
"Smart man,"
said Jake, twisting the cable into one of the ports just outside Anubis's hatch.
"Let's be honest, though," Gordon said. "Lana's company way more than she's a Lunar. One loud question from Discorp and she'll flip. She's near meltdown over the Hausman kid as it is."
"Great."
"She's waiting for you."
Gordon turned and loped down the passage into Luna City. Wagid watched him go, then he looked at Izmi and his gaze jumped to Jake.
"What are we going to do? If Lana's not going to listen,
just go after him,"
said Jake. He waved an arm at the buggy's side and the pressure tunnel sealed against it.
"Leave all this for later."
Wagid glanced at Anubis, nodded, and headed down the hall with Izmi at his side. Jake turned back to Callie and Tessa.
"You heard him. Leave it. Let's go."
"I heard you,"
said Tessa, still in the buggy's doorway.
"Wagid didn't actually say..."
"Let's," Jake said. "Go."
Tessa opened her mouth, shut it, lifted her chin.
"Newbie, rest in recharge mode."
"Of course, Tessa,"
said the AI. She hopped down from the hatch and reached back to double-tap the outside controls. The hatch slid shut behind her. A pair of red lights lit up on either side of the recharge port. A few minutes of long, lunar striding brought them to the Luna City main plaza. Up ahead, Wagid, Izmi, and Gordon had already passed the Armstrong tree, heading for Chandra Boulevard. Callie looked around the plaza. It didn't seem any less populated than it had when she'd been there 4 weeks ago. Everyone seemed at ease and relaxed. A group of tourist children bounded up and down trying to grab the Armstrong tree's lowest branches. She nudged Jake as they walked.
"So the city doesn't have any defenses at all? Not even walls or fences?"
"Fences?"
Jake shook his head.
"What the hell for? It's the moon."
"Not like anyone's been worried about space raccoons getting in the trash cans."
"But there are protocols,"
said Tessa. She pointed at the big arch ahead of them.
"Emergency bulkheads can seal off the boulevards or more at-risk areas."
"Which,"
Callie said,
I'm guessing can't be activated without alerting Discorp there's a problem.
Got it and won, said Jake.
Ah, Mr. Yazzie,
a voice called out. Gillyman came skipping across the plaza. He flashed a too big smile at Callie and didn't seem to notice Tessa.
I thought I just saw Wagid go dashing by. I wonder if I could trouble you.
Not now, Russ, Jake said.
It's just a small matter of proper... Later, growled Jake.
They left him behind as they headed down Chandra Boulevard. Jake steered them to the ramp for Upper Chandra, and a few minutes later they were before a door marked Mayor's Office. He knocked twice, and it slid open. Lanagathol's office was larger than Callie's room back at Osiris, but not by much. Wagid and Gordon held the center spot with Izmi close by, all three of them staring across the desk at the mayor. Callie found herself edged into a corner next to a freshly watered plant with lots of vine-like branches and leaves like swollen teardrops. Tessa was in the opposite corner, her head ringed by an antique clock face with large Roman numerals. When Callie had first seen the mayor, almost a month ago, the woman had been bright and cheerful, polished and ready for her latest photo op with a bunch of visiting school children. Getting a second, longer look, Callie realized Lana was older than she'd first guessed. Tiny creases around her eyes, the scattered gray hair that had pushed up through her dark auburn dye. Things the reduced lunar gravity still couldn't stop. She had the bearing and body of a woman in her 30s, but might be closing in on her 50s. And right now, she had a certain frantic energy to her words and movements that Callie recognized from school. Lana's big production was falling apart around her, and she hadn't admitted it yet. Not enough understudies, the set wasn't done, and the air conditioner in the house had died, but she still thought she could make it work.
"I'm not going to help you commit career suicide," said Lana once the door had closed again. "I don't think it's suicide when something kills you. We can't declare an evacuation without determining if there's an actual threat."
"They killed Daniel right in front of Jake," said Wagid.
"Your preacher?"
he nodded.
"And Megan," said Jake. "And Anna."
"And Arturo Mendez," added Callie. "Don't forget Mikhail and Thomas," murmured Tessa.
"They're a threat," said Wagid. "They're dangerous, they're smart, and they're headed this way."
Lana swiped at her desktop and brought up one of the satellite images. Callie's eyes found the timestamp, and it took her a moment to read it upside down. 3 hours ago.
"Okay,"
Lana said. She closed her eyes for a moment, accenting the dark rings beneath them.
"Okay. Priorities. Do we know with any degree of certainty where Kurt Hausman is?"
Callie closed her eyes. Jake groaned loudly.
"Lana," said Wagid, "I know you don't want to hear this, but we need to forget about him. We have a serious..."
"No,"
her head snapped side to side.
"Absolutely not. Until we're 100% certain he's dead, we have to go under the assumption he's alive."
"He's not," Jake said.
"Do you know that? No questions, stake your life on it, know that?"
"Of course not, but..."
"So he might be alive."
Wagid glanced back at Jake and shook his head.
"There's a chance he's alive, sure. There's always a chance, but I wouldn't bet on it."
"Wouldn't bet big or wouldn't bet at all?"
"Honestly, Lana, I wouldn't even walk past the table."
"Damn it."
The mayor pressed her hands over her eyes and let her head sag toward the desk for a moment.
"Do you know what losing this kid means? They're going to hold all of us responsible, every single one of us."
Wagid took another breath, straightened his fingers at his sides.
"Lana, whatever hit out by Hades has brought all the clients back to life. They're heading in this direction. They're going to be here by tomorrow night, and they're killing everything in their way. That's what's happening."
Sweat had dampened one of Callie's sleeves. She plucked at it, and the material slid between her fingers. The residue slicked her fingertips. Lana sighed.
What's happening is we've somehow lost the fuckwit son of Discorp's CEO.
She sighed again.
I can't tell them we've got a goddamn vampire horde on the moon. You realize how insane that sounds, right?
They're not vampires, Callie said. They're zombies.
They're not zombies either, said Jake.
Tessa made a wet noise somewhere between a sigh and a snort.
If you had any proof, it'd be different, said Lana. But I can't author—
There's tons of proof, barked Jake.
His words echoed in the small office.
Stop interrupting me, Jake,
said Lana in an icy voice.
There's five witnesses. There's helmet cam footage. There's the original message from Hades. The communications blackouts. Satellite footage of the dust storms.
Jake leaned forward, glaring at her.
You just don't like what the proof says. You're so worried it'll make you sound dumb you'd rather ignore it until it's too late.
Tessa sniffed and looked over at Callie, then down at Callie's sweat-slick arm. She snarled and twisted to look behind herself. Callie tilted her head to see what had the other woman's attention.
What if it wasn't zombies? Offered Wagid. What if we told them something else?
Callie looked down at her sleeve. The dark, wet stain reached from her elbow down to the cuff of the jumpsuit.
Grease?
Blood? Could she have gotten cut and not noticed?
Yeah, Jake said to Lana. Forget anything anyone said about clients getting up or dead caretakers walking around. There's still enough evidence to justify some kind of threat to Discorp and the tourists. Just say it's radiation or something and call for the damned evac while there's still time.
Callie's gaze went past her sleeve and she saw what Tessa had seen.
Jake,
she murmured. He held up a hand, the pinky and ring finger slightly curled, asking her to wait but not dismissing her. It amazed her how precise his gestures could be.
We can evacuate, they can deal with it, and—
Jake,
insisted Callie.
What?
He turned to look at her, and she stepped away, letting him see the plant she'd been leaning against. Its rotted leaves turned black and curled. The stems withered into tough strings.
We're too late, said Callie.